This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
It began long ago. Two young boys in an American town riding their bikes to school and Little League practice. Over the years, the boys became fast friends, united in their love for stories where things would go horribly wrong. Pour yourself a strong beverage and buckle up. You're in the shallow end with Schnepley and Tal.
Is it actually episode 84, JG? Is that possible?
That's what my computer is telling me, and I believe everything I see on my computer. So,
because that would imply that we have been doing this a long time, and I still feel like we just started this a few weeks ago.
I think it still sounds like we just started this a few weeks ago, too.
Maybe that's where I'm getting confused.
It could be. I don't know, but...
It just feels so amateurish that it must, this must be episode 3.
In another way, it seems like it's been forever because we have done this, share these kind of stories together for decades.
Right.
Long before the invention of the interwebbles.
It was actually before the invention of radio, I think, wasn't it?
I think it was. It was, I think our childhood was in black and white.
Yeah.
Until I think it was junior high and then everything was in color.
Yeah, everything shifted to color.
Yeah,
I agree. Good times.
It was a real good time.
Good times. I'm hearing in my ear from our producer that that I'm going first today. Is that true? Yeah,
that's what I heard too. So have at it, my good man.
All right. Do you remember the opening scene of? I think it was the opening scene of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Paul Newman walks into a bank.
Yes.
And it's close-ups of different parts of the bank and how secure it is. And then his facial expression, he's looking extremely disapproving at all these changes. And he finally goes up to a guard and says, "What happened to the old bank? It was beautiful." And the guard says, "People kept robbing it." And he says, "Small price to pay for beauty," and storms out of the...
I remember that. Yeah. I haven't seen that film in a while, but that is one of my favorites.
It's such a great film. So damn good. Well, it sort of reminded me of my story today. Our subject of episode 84, Lindsay's story, is a guy named Richard Ricky Hampton. And Ricky, it seems, has always had a thing for banks.
What, the architectural beauty?
More of the little pieces of green paper they keep in those banks.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And one particular bank, in fact, in downtown Canton, Ohio. It's a bank. It's Key Bank. I don't know how familiar you are with Key Bank, if they had those in Florida. Okay. Well, in downtown Canton, they have a particular branch of Key Bank. And back in 2005, Ricky just couldn't resist the temptation to walk in there one day with a handgun and rob the place.
Well, who among us hasn't had that feeling?
Right? That reminds me of that that Monty Python line. Who among us can honestly say he hasn't at one time or another burned down a great public building? I know I have. Anyway,
let's not quibble back and forth about who killed who.
Ricky that day got only, in quotes, $2,183 from that particular key bank. But he wasn't done. Same day, he gets in a car and drives a short distance to a First Merit bank. And there, he walks out with $4,800. So just shy of $7,000. Not bad for a day's work, right? Tax-free. Only problem was that he got caught right away, and he ended up getting 3 years in prison for knocking off those two banks. Now, the video surveillance in both those banks aided in the investigation, to say nothing of the fact the people who were looking for him, and this just kind of put a chill down my spine, and I thought, this is one of the many reasons why I've never thought it was a good idea to rob a bank, because the organizations that were after him were the FBI's Stark County offices, the Stark County Sheriff's Office, Canton, Ohio Police, and the U.S. Marshals Fugitive Task Force. So
when you rob a bank, you ring a bell there,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, unfortunately, people pay attention to that stuff. So that was back in 2005. He got 3 years prison. He's out now in 2008. In 2009, though, he was sentenced to 5-year prison term for a series of bank robberies.
So he didn't give up. He just,
no, he just figured, I need to apply myself. So he got out for those robberies in 2014. Well, in 2016, that same key bank that you probably recall I mentioned just a few minutes ago, the one that he knocked off in 2005.
Right.
In 2016, 11 years later, he walks into that exact same key bank and robbed it a second time.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, yeah. He, I don't know, maybe it was like Paul Newman and the architecture. Maybe there was something, you know, aesthetic about the incandescent lighting or the canned, you know, elevator music in the background.
Formica countertops.
The Formica countertop. Mm. The yellowed, you know, calendar on the wall. I don't know. Mm. I don't know what it was, but he decided once wasn't enough, so he knocked it off a second time. Now, he got caught again and was sentenced to 8 years in prison and also ordered to make restitution of the roughly $7,000 that he got from robbing that a second time. So, sentenced to 8 years. But it appears, JG, that he got out early from that. And do you know how we know this?
Let me guess. He was arrested at Key Bank for attempted robbery?
Well, how did you figure that out so quickly?
Well, there's a certain profile of the type of people we talk about here on this podcast.
There is, isn't there? Richard Ricky Hampton walked in just a few weeks ago and robbed that same damned bank for a third time.
Oh, my God.
But this time he got a little, I'm trying to think of the polite way to put this, confused, because when he wrote that note to hand to the tellers announcing that he was robbing the bank, he forgot to ask for money. What?
What, did his note just say, I've got a gun?
Well, you're actually pretty damn close. This is according to the FBI. On December 11th, Ricky Hampton was accused of slipping a note to a teller at that same key bank that he'd robbed twice before. This is the third time. But it wasn't a very good bank robbery note because he left out a key word. Actually, the note said only two things. On the top of the note, it read, give me the, and then nothing. And then on the bottom of the note, it's just the word gun written below it.
Oh, okay.
So she's looking at this. Is this like, give me the gun or I don't have a gun. Why would you hand me a note that says, give me the gun? But Ricky is now looking across the way at the teller and realizing that she's almost holding up the note like, I don't quite understand. Mm-hmm. And he points to his waistband several times, intimating like, hey, I got a gun. So very wisely, the teller, despite these confusing instructions, hands Ricky a bag of cash, $723, and then a stack of $20 bills totaling $80. But that stack of $80 bills actually had a tracking device. So police, once the teller hits the little button saying, hey, I'm being robbed, and the police are now able to track him, they are able to find him pretty quickly.
Was he in his car, like, no, tuning the radio to his favorite station?
Better than that.
Ooh, it's Africa by Toto.
That's my jam. I can't hear Africa enough. He had gone to a grocery store near this bank and gone up to a total stranger and said, hey, I'll pay you $50 if you drive me to this bank. It's this key bank next door, and I need to cash a check. So
the same bank he just robbed?
No, this is prior to robbing that bank.
Okay. Gotcha.
He goes to the grocery store, finds a stranger, says, here's $50. Would you drive me to the bank? So the guy, not really an Uber driver, just somebody who had a car, says, well, sure, I need the $50. So that guy drives Ricky to Key Bank and just sits there thinking he's just going in to, you know, cash a check, he'll be out. And sure enough, Ricky walks out very, very nonchalant and gets in the car and says, okay, let's get out of here. And at that point, the police are already arriving and they see Ricky are able to track it. And they noted that the car was driving incredibly casually. Like, there's no rush at all. He's stopping at lights. He's using his turn indicator. It's like, this is not a getaway car at all, at all. So they pull it over and the guy's understandably confused. Like, why are there cops with guns drawn? And they are only after Ricky, and they briefly interview the driver and realize that he had absolutely nothing to do with this. He was an unwitting accomplice. And so they cut him loose. So they take Ricky back to the police station and they show him the note that says, give me the, and then gun written on the bottom of it. And they're like, Ricky, what's up with this? Why didn't you say, give me the money? And Ricky looks at the note and goes, huh? Yeah, I was smoking crack before I went to the bank. So I forgot to write the word money on the note.
Mm.
So a word to the wise, if you're going to rob a bank, you probably want to use better grammar, because not only is Ricky now looking at even more time in federal prison for robbing a bank, but probably mocked by his fellow inmates for not using a proper grammar.
And put the pipe down, Ricky, for the love of God.
Put down the pipe, put down the gun. And for God's sake, you've hit that bank now 3 times. Leave that one alone. Got this from WHSC-TV, WSYX-TV, the CantonRepository.com, GlobalNews.com, and the Sacramento Bee.
Ricky, don't rob that bank again.
Ricky, don't rob that bank. You don't want to rob nobody else.
Send it off in a letter you misspell.
By the way, a shout out to Reed Savory, one of our loyal listeners, who not only has maybe one of the coolest names ever, but suggested that story.
Yeah, I love people's names when their first name is like a noun.
We used to be called Doggy Town, but we've grown so big, we're changing our name to Doggy City, the largest showroom of canines on Earth. We've got every breed known to man, and even breeds that haven't been developed yet. Want a corgi?
Who doesn't?
Want a corgi Basenji mix?
Who's a good boy?
Want a large poodle?
No, I hate poodles.
Or a toy poodle?
That's a dropkick dog.
If you ever change your mind, we've got scads of them.
That's a lot.
Our smallest dog weighs just 1.8 pounds. Our largest dog is so big, he broke our scale. Doggy City, off Interstate 4 in Orlando. Doggy City.
Not affiliated with Doggy Village or Doggy Hamlet of Miami.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
The email address is lifeguard@shallowendpodcast.com.
All the things that happen when the mics are off.
Count yourself lucky you didn't hear what I just did when I thought my mic was open. Good day there, lovelies, says a listener from I don't know where. But the fact that she says good day makes me think maybe she's down under, so to speak.
You know, it's funny. We get so many emails from we don't know where.
That might be our largest base of listeners, in fact. She says, I hope this message doesn't make you feel sad as I realize the name Haggis is very dear to both Kat and JG. I recently listened to the Box of Oddities podcast where you briefly mentioned Ernest Shackleton. I remember once upon a time, hundreds of years ago now, I worked in the same school, different departments as Haggis Shackleton, a distant cousin, I think. Ernest was his grandfather's cousin. Wow. Anywhozle, we both worked at the University of South Australia, so I got to Googling. Haggis never goes by his given name, William. I had to actually look it up as he was introduced to me as Haggis, and I never questioned what his real name was. I found a video of him on YouTube and thought you might like to see Ernest's Relly. There are a couple of other sites, too. It seems our friendly geologist is right into social media. He's a lovely bloke, so good for him. Take care. Keep up the good work, both with Boo and the Shallow End. And then this is the part I love the best. She says, everyone loves you and appreciates your work. So all the best for 2024. Aww. Happy New Year. Much love, Jerry. Isn't that sweet?
Thanks, Jerry.
I didn't know everyone loved us. I thought it was more a disdain and kind of a, I have to put up with this for half an hour every week.
The people that do love us, they're the ones that don't tell us where they are, you know.
Okay, so gotcha. That makes good sense. Yeah.
Makes some sense. Yeah. We got an email to a social media message on one of the Box of Oddities pages. Somebody wanted to know if that was me on the radio at the beginning of the John Wick movie.
Hmm.
And I said, no, but I know the guy who is.
That's
wild. That was you, right?
That was me. Yeah. Boy, that's interesting, considering that some people thought you were the voice of the curator.
Yeah.
And were surprised that you actually had enough connections to get a third person to work with you on your podcast.
That I actually had a friend.
That somebody would hear that and think, that must be JG.
Isn't that funny?
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.
When Johann Rahl received the letter on Christmas Day 1776, he put it away to read later. Maybe he thought it was a season's greeting and wanted to save it for the fireside. But what it actually was a warning, delivered to the Hessian colonel, letting him know that General George Washington was crossing the Delaware and would soon attack his forces. The next day, when Rahl lost the Battle of Trenton and died from two Colonial Boxing Day musket balls, the letter was found, unopened, in his vest pocket. As someone with 15,000 unread emails in his inbox, I feel like there's a lesson there. Oh well, this is The Constant, A History of Getting Things Wrong. I'm Mark Chrysler, Every episode, we look at the bad ideas, mistakes, and accidents that misshaped our world. Find us at constantpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're in the shallow end with Schnepley and Toth.
Well, I got a story for you.
Hit me.
This one takes place in Cambodia, in the heart of Phnom Penh. A young couple's love story recently took a dark and unexpected turn. Now, I'm not really sure how to pronounce these names correctly, so please forgive me. Leng Sochiata. Sochiata. Leng Sochiata, a 23-year-old university student, had been in a relationship with a young lady, Ung Lime, a 21-year-old woman from a nearby neighborhood. They'd been seeing each other for a few months. However, the relationship faced some pretty strong opposition from Leng's parents, who had expressed distrust and concerns about the young lady from the very beginning.
Interesting.
At first, Leng resisted his family's wishes. They kept asking him or begging him to break up with her, but he continued to date Ung, believing in the strength of their love. You know, like a Romeo and Juliet kind of thing.
I was just going to say, yeah, Romeo and Juliet.
Friends and neighbors described the couple as head over heels in love and often would see them enjoying walks along the Mekong River, exchanging loving glances and whispers of affection. But beneath the surface of their passionate love story lurks a series of secrets that would eventually shatter their relationship.
Uh-oh.
The story began with Leng's parents raising their initial concerns about Ung. They cited differences in social backgrounds and questioned her intentions. They believed that she might have ulterior motives, given her humble beginnings. They thought maybe she was a gold digger.
You know, it's interesting because I feel like, to me, unusual, it's usually the other way around. I feel like it's more common that a woman's family is saying to the girl, hey, we don't like this guy. You need to cut this off. But this is exactly the opposite.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because I think you're right. I think statistically it would be the other way around.
Yeah, yeah.
But despite his parents' objections, Leng remained steadfast in his love for Ung. And he reassured his family that their love was genuine and transcended all societal differences and so on. However, the family's concerns deepened as time went on, so they began to notice unusual behavior from Ung, like her tendency to avoid discussing her past. They were very concerned about that. She was very mysterious and evasive when it came to that.
Interesting.
She also always wore long sleeves and scarves, even in the hottest days, like she was hiding something. So in an effort to understand their son's choices, his parents began their own investigation into Ung Lime's background.
Interesting.
They discovered that they were correct in not trusting her. They found out that she had a criminal past, including involvement in drug possession.
Oh, boy.
And also had been convicted of jewelry theft.
Oh, boy.
And these discoveries confirmed their greatest fears.
Sure.
This is not the kind of girl we want our boy hanging out with.
No.
So this kind of prompted a crisis in the family, and Leng's parents confronted him with the evidence that they had unearthed about Ung's criminal history. And in a heart-wrenching decision, Leng chose to heed his family's advice and end the relationship with Ung. The decision was not easy for him because he did care about her.
Sure.
But she had not told him about this, and relationships should be built on trust. Ung's actions that day were driven by a mix of emotions, I'm sure. Chief among them, a sense of deep betrayal and rejection. Her feelings of abandonment and anger.
Right.
They were brewing now and continued to for a time. She felt jilted discarded like an unwanted object, and that began to fester into an overwhelming desire for revenge.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah. We're now knocking on the door of finding a bunny in the stovepot.
Yeah, that's kind of where I thought it was going, too. Days turned into sleepless nights, and her thoughts became consumed by thoughts of retribution. She could not accept that her love had been replaced by indifference, and she perceived it was a great injustice for her. Her increasing obsession with vengeance continued to grow. Now, it was in this dark emotional period that she hatched an ill-fated plan to carry out, are you ready for this?
I hope not.
An acid attack on
Lang. No. No acid. No.
Yeah.
No.
In her mind, she believed that by causing him physical and emotional pain, she could make him understand the depths of her anguish and suffering.
Jeez.
So
maybe if I scald you with burning acid, you'll come back to me because you'll realize how much I love you.
There are some people that believe things like this.
Yeah. Okay.
So she makes a plan. Not a very good one, but a plan.
But damn it, it's a plan.
It's a damn plan. She contacted Lang and she begged him for help. She said she was stranded and she needed a ride. And Lang was a pretty good guy. He shows up to pick her up on his motorcycle. You know, it's a nice gesture.
Probably even had a spare helmet for her.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Ung had planned to pour acid on her ex-fiance, seeking revenge for their broken relationship. Unfortunately for her, she didn't do it either before or after the motorcycle ride. She attempted to carry out the attack on the bike while it was moving.
Oh, boy. All right. So we're officially in genius land now.
We're in genius land now. Things didn't end up the way she anticipated. As she attempted to carry out the attack, the vast majority of the corrosive chemical blew back into her face.
Everyone act surprised. How would that work?
Unbelievable. Now, she did get some on her boyfriend, and he was seriously injured, but did recover. The painful aftermath, though, of the acid exposure caused Lang to lose control of the motorbike, and it crashed, and that further exasperated the injuries of both individuals. The police showed up and they took Ling to the hospital for treatment. And Ung fled the scene before law enforcement arrived. And they have not found her as of the writing of this article. Yeah. It's believed that she sought treatment for her burn injuries at a private medical facility because they had no record of it being in any public place. A spokesman for the police in that district of Phnom Penh, where the incident occurred, provided details about the ongoing investigation. He stated, quote, "We are currently searching for the young woman who allegedly carried out an acid attack on her former boyfriend while riding behind him on a motorbike." His family has suggested it was an act motivated by revenge, as they had convinced him to end the relationships. Efforts to locate her have included checking all of the state hospitals. No indications of her presence. That led authorities to suspect that she did somehow get to a private institution. Local media, however, have circulated photographs of Ung with her face bandaged on social media platforms. Apparently, she did a selfie. So that's the first thing you do after you burn your face with acid
while trying to scald your jilted lover.
Police spokesperson confirmed that they had previously arrested her on drug charges and a warrant has been issued for her arrest. He expressed confidence in locating her quickly, saying, "We're well acquainted with her, so I do not anticipate a lengthy search." I would also imagine noting that her face was burned off would help during the ID process as well.
Yeah. I would think that would kind of stand out.
Now, here's the thing, Linz. Acid attacks have been relatively common in Cambodia.
Really?
Yeah, it's a pretty common occurrence compared to other cities.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know, but it's so bad they've put stringent new laws in place, and it's contributed to an 80% reduction in such incidents. Earlier this year, one perpetrator was sentenced to life in prison.
Wow.
For involvement in an acid attack.
Holy cow.
Which really kind of underscores the country's commitment to addressing this and preventing it from happening again. But as I said, I scoured the interwebbles and I did not see anything about her arrest as of yet. But she's
interesting.
She's probably going to spend the rest of her life looking a lot differently than she did before took that ride.
This is a case, of somebody who just needs to meet the right person. She sounds very special. Uh-huh. And somewhere out there, there's a guy that hasn't met his wife yet, but she's just going to make him deliriously happy. And
well, let's hope so.
Just trying to find a little positive on this.
That's a fair attempt, my good
How's
man.
That for trying to make lemonade, huh?
Whew. My information, the Daily Mail, Yahoo News, and the Phnom Penh Post.
Lovely.
So kids, if you're a jilted lover and you want to burn your ex with acid, don't do it on the back of a motorbike while it's in motion.
When you said that, I thought to myself, well, she's not going to do it while they're riding on the bike. I mean, even she must realize the laws of physics are probably not in your favor.
Mm, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn. Wow. Wow. Kudos to his family for being not only suspicious, but convincing him to get out of that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. You unfortunately, know? Well, I don't know if it's unfortunate, the result, but it was, I guess initially it was a very kind gesture of him, but I would
you think mean to go pick her up?
To go pick her up, but you know, I don't know. You spend so much time with somebody, and I'm sure he had seen flashes of this in her personality somewhere.
I would sure think so, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, yeah. Acid in the face is a bad thing.
Leave the acid to the professionals, kids. That's all I can say.
Lifeguard at shallowendpodcast.com. That is our email address. And we were talking off the air, like we're still in radio.
Like we're still in radio.
off mic a moment ago about the length of some of the emails that we're getting because the stories are incredibly detailed and wonderful. And I think we're probably at a point where we could consider doing another listener's email edition of the program.
Absolutely. And Nancy and I were hiking just about an hour ago, and I was saying, I can't believe that JG and I are going to record episode 84. And then I started doing the math and I realized, well, that means we're only 15 weeks away from our 100th episode.
Mm.
And Nancy said, I think you guys should do for the 100th episode, tell your own funniest shallow end moment.
I love that.
From your life. And I thought,
that is
what?
A great
That's
idea.
A damn good idea. And now that I've got 15 weeks to try and figure out what that might be.
And I've got 15 weeks to decide which one I want to use.
I think I might just take one of yours and steal it. Because
I got plenty. You can have one of mine.
You do have quite a collection that I have long admired.
Love to hear from you guys. Look forward to seeing you next time. Continue to make good choices.
Because your life might depend on it.
So concludes another episode of The Shallow End with Schnepley and Toff. We thank you for listening. Oh, be a dear, would you? Please subscribe to this podcast, give these boys a 5-star rating, and think of something nice to say, even if you have to make something up. And visit us online at shallowendpodcast.com. Okay, gotta go.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. you'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love history but hate when it's stuffy and boring? Well, look no further and join me, Katie Charlwood, your friendly neighborhood social scientist and reader of books, as I delve into unsolved historical mysteries, murders by gaslight, and of course, women who have been misrepresented through all time. On Who Did What Now, the history podcast that's not your history class. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.